For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dan Smolin. I built a successful executive career in marketing and communications before becoming a top headhunter and founding my own executive search firm. Now get this, every day, mainstream media runs stories in which old school bosses and thought leaders frame your work and workplace issues in ways that are often divisive and unmeaningful. And that's just crazy. The time has come for you to answer the question, what's your work fit, so that your work and career fit who you are, how you want to live, and what you want your lasting contributions to be. What's your work fit? It answers your questions and tackles the issues that keep you up at night about advancing your career in this time of workplace revolution. So let's get started. Hey, good day, everyone. Dan Smolin from What's Your Work Fit? And of course, today is What's Your Work Fit in the Workplace? I'm really excited about the show today. We're getting a lot of interest. A lot of people have logged on to watch. We're digging in. We're digging into the why of work and workplace. So it's great to have you. My ask today is if you have a pressing question for our guest, and for our show, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're on Facebook Live, if you are on our YouTube channel, put your question in the comment box, hit return, and we may get to ask it for you. It's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, we're going to get right to it. I'm going to introduce you first to our guest, and that's Terry Weiner. Good day, Terry Weiner. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So let me tell you about Terry. Terry is a workplace and team effectiveness thought leader. And she was once Dropbox's head of virtual first. So she is a font of information about how we get intentional about the workplace. And joining us today is one of my two co-hosts, Frances Saley. Hello, Fran.
Hi, Dan. Nice to be here.
Fran is one of the leading thought leaders on what I'll call the intersection of future of work and workplace. And so if you aren't doing so already, follow Fran on LinkedIn and you will just be exposed to a lot of information that's going to inform the future of work and workplace. Okay, you two. We are expecting our other co-host, Mark Gilbreth. I have to feel that he's probably trying to find a place to log on. You know, if he's traveling and if he does come on, we'll bring him on. But, you know, like they say, the show must go on. Okay. Let's get to it. So normally, Terry, the questions that we ask on the show come from an individual viewer. And it's usually the fever dream that keeps them up at night. And it could be something very specific. It could be something very mundane. Uh-huh. This week's question came from Fran, Mark, and me, and we're all thinking about it. And it is, you know, truly an important one. It is, why are we gathering for work anyway? So, Terry, why are we gathering for work anyway?
Yeah, I think the main reason is for human connection. Right. And I want to read just a little excerpt that I read in an article recently by Mark Perna on Forbes. And I want to read this because I thought he described it so well. He says, a true human connection is forged when a person feels seen, heard, and valued by another individual. The strength of that connection is built over time as ongoing interactions cement and deepen. And human connection emphasizes the moment of making contact, of being eye to eye and belly to belly, right? And I feel like that describes like a lot of what people think and feel once they have those gatherings. And to me, it's about a sense of belonging and feeling connected to people, which can lead to better engagement and connectedness to company values, mission, and purpose. And while remote work has its benefits, there are some unintended consequences of loneliness and isolation. So to me, that connection is really the social fabric that holds people together, even when they're not physically together all the time. And you know, when you have that foundation, I think, you know, people feel more engaged and motivated to do their best work, not only themselves, but in service of their team and their organization. It really helps people move beyond the transactional, right? I don't just go to work. I want to feel like I'm delivering great value and making a positive impact. And so, you know, I had the privilege of meeting with, you know, Sasha Connor from Virtual Work Insider and Mark Cruz from Atlassian a couple of weeks ago, both experts, right, in virtual work, in helping distribute teams and helping leaders. We had met a bunch of times on calls. I already felt connected to them, but that in-person connection did help just amplify that connection even more. Like, I know that if I'm having a bad day, like I can tell Sasha, hey, I'm having a bad day, might be a little bit off, and I know she has my back. And I think that's really the value of gathering. And we need to master the art of gathering. We need to, you know, be purposeful and intentful. And when you design those experiences to be more intent, with more intent, I think what you start seeing is people can build social capital, increase tacit knowledge within the organization, improve overall team effectiveness. And then ultimately, I think that helps performance, well-being, and sense of belonging overall.
Fran, you take it over.
Terry, this is a really important area, and let's dwell on it a little bit because I think it is important. You mentioned that the gathering factors are being seen, heard, and valued, right? So you can get that in this kind of discussion that we're having, where we're sitting, you know, thousands of miles apart. But we don't have quite the intensity of the interaction because you're not sitting next to me. And I don't have that. I can see, I can look at your eyes, but I can't really see into your eyes. You know what I mean? That difference. I know there's been some studies done on collaboration and what collaboration should be done where. And I think there was a Forbes discussion about this recently, which I don't think I posted, but it was an interesting discussion where they ranked the kinds of things that are best done in person to collaborate versus those that are not best done virtually. For example, if there's a team and they want to have a quick discussion on one topic for a minute or two, it's best to do that on camera versus getting in a car and driving to an office to do it, because that's a total waste of time. But from your perspective, how do you gauge, or do you make that differentiation, and how would you gauge the type of gathering that would require an in-person presence versus those which perhaps are best done virtually?
Yeah, I think
I don't ask easy questions, by the way.
You don't ask easy questions. But I think the key ingredient here is, you know, pushing that type of decision making down to the team level and mm-hmm. letting teams have more agency to decide. And I say that because I think, you know, teams are made of, you know, people with very unique personal and professional needs. Some teams have been together for a long time and some are newly formed. Some teams have gone through a lot of change and some are more stable. Some teams work on very simple routine tasks and some have more complex initiatives that require a lot more interactions, right? And so I think there are so many factors that might impact why and how often teams should gather. And then there are just the pure logistics of whether in person or virtual and the feasibility. Like, do I have money to bring my team together? Do I have the budget to do that, to bring people together, especially if my team's really scattered? So with all those dimensions, I think it's no wonder why some of these more blanket policies often fail or leave employees feeling like they were misheard, right? They want the flexibility to choose. And no one's saying, I want just to go to the office, or I want just to work from home. I think we're looking at sort of this hybrid spectrum or hybrid continuum. And Mark's not here, but Mark's coined that term hybrid continuum, because it's really about that spectrum of options and that mix of options and the ability to let teams choose. And it's about the purpose, right? Like, when teams get to decide why and when, there's no set number of days or hours that means of togetherness. I think there's an opportunity here to really look at team agreements. And we can go into team agreements a little bit more, but I think the team agreements is what can really help activate and bring people together with more purpose.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, let's dig into team agreements, because I think the process is daunting for old school managers who are used to being top-down edict drivers versus bottom-up ideation praisers and so forth. So what is a team agreement, and what are some of the current best practices to make them happen?
Yeah. I'll start with maybe the general approach to the framework, right, to how to make it work. And I think before talking about what is a team agreement, I want to first start with empowerment and talk about empowerment. I think that in order to make this work, you have to give managers the ability to make the decisions and create these team agreements based on the needs of their team while being clear about the goals and outcomes. There's an enablement piece, right? Providing teams and managers with the resources and training on how to lead an inclusive and effective distributed team. And then there's engagement, engaging them in the process, understanding what motivates and energizes them, and keeping them in the know of the why. Another E word I'll say is experiment, right? We're still figuring this out. A lot of us are kind of, figuring this out. And so I think there's a huge opportunity to give managers and teams the space to try new things and adapt new ways of working for the better. And the last E word is kind of cheating, but the last E word I'll say is employee as a customer, right? Designing experience and thinking about employees as a customer, because that customer or user-centric mindset that many companies apply when designing products or services, I think that mindset should also be applied when designing the experiences of their employees internally, right? So that's kind of the framework I'm thinking about and how to make this work. Now, what should be in a team agreement? Well, there could be so many things in a team agreement, and I'll share some examples. When I was at Genentech, the agreements most commonly had sections around, how do we communicate, how we collaborate, what tools to use and when, and then also the degree of flexibility, right? With office as the default, there was conversations around how often can we work from home? What's the range of flexibility? Is it a certain percentage, up to 40%, 50%, that sort of thing. At Dropbox, there are more, self-service toolkits for teams to decide what norms to establish around, meetings, technology tool use, boundaries, managing energy levels. But the biggest team agreement at Dropbox or company-wide agreement was around core collaboration hours. And this was a really great thing. I think core collaboration hours were nice because there were these chunks of time across each region where employees had to prioritize those synchronous meetings. And what was nice about that is it allowed teams to also, or people, individuals, to also then free up time for more focused work, or to meet other personal demands, right? And so I love that because it talks more to being able to allow individuals to achieve these nonlinear work days. And we talk a lot about location flexibility, but I think there's a lot to the when and how people work and providing flexibility in those ways. Other team agreements, and if you're starting to think about gathering specifically, I'd say with team agreements to start with deciding the async versus sync norms. As important as it is to talk about when we gather, I actually think it's pretty important to talk about when we don't gather, right? And we have a bit of a, I think people can relate to this, a little bit of a back-to-back meeting crisis, mm-hmm. you know, in America. We're sitting there in back-to-back meetings, and I think a lot of it is just a symptom of several different causes, such as not having the right tools and technology, but also not adopting an async by default mindset. So I start there with async, you know, versus sync norms in your team agreements. And then I talk about the purpose of gatherings. Why do we come together? We come together to celebrate, to help onboard new employees, to build relationships, to get, you know, development or mentorship. And when you have these conversations, so that's the magic, right? When you have these conversations with your teams, I think it starts helping people understand the value of coming together, right?
Just curious, Terry, didn't Drew Houston have a rule about meetings that they couldn't occur at certain times of the day? It could only occur at certain times of the day, which would allow people to get, you know, individual work done wherever they were. Tell us about that and how did that play out?
So those were the, like I mentioned, the core collaboration hours. And that was the idea, was trying to chunk together the times when you would prioritize meeting with your colleagues for collaboration. And then outside of that, it allowed individuals the freedom and flexibility to choose what they did the other time. So that could be more focused work. And I think that was nice because now you have your times blocked in certain activities and you can be more effective when you can have more chunks of time to do certain things. So I really thought that was a really great way to think about it. And I think more teams should adopt that because it's too hard, right? Too hard to have a meeting and then have like 30 minutes of focus time and then have another chunk of meetings and then have only 20 minutes of focus time. So it's really hard to be as effective as possible when you don't, you know, group together some of your core hours like that.
I want to get to some comments. I am thrilled that the comment thread is blowing up today, and I probably won't be able to get to everything, but I want to start with what our friend Amina Moreau from Radius has to say. And she says, my team and I are in the process of aligning on such agreements as a startup now using this methodology. I bring up Amina because she is...
I love her!
Oh, well, I do too.
Everybody loves her. It's the glasses. That's what it is.
Well here's the thing about it. Here's the thing about our friend Amina. She's got a pre-IPO startup. I mean, she's working really hard to get to, you know, the day where this thing really rocks and rolls. She's building things like team agreements into the structure of her company. Can you speak to why that's important?
Yeah, I think, you know, it helps create that basis for understanding. And, you know, when you get to really having those deep discussions, what you start uncovering is the importance of balancing individual preferences and individual work-life commitments with the team goals and organizational goals and requirements, right? You also, when you go through the process, you also have talk about the real logistics that need to be considered when bringing distributed teams together. And what you often find is, you know, most teammates want the same outcomes. I truly believe that most teammates do want to feel connected. They want to deliver value and impact. They want to further the team's goals. They don't want to waste time. And more importantly, they respect each other's time. So I think that's, to me, like really some of the framework and why we want to do this and how I encourage people to think about it.
I want to get to one of the questions that came in before the show, and it's from Helena Minsk, who asks, or who says, I was just reading McKinsey's latest Women in the Workplace survey, and they talk about the pros and cons, more pros for men, of what she calls on-site versus remote or hybrid work. So we're talking about team agreements, and I'm wondering if you've had any insight in real time as to how different genders relate to this process.
Yeah, it definitely takes a real skill when you're going through the process to have an inclusive conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely been data out there about some of these mandates about coming into the office a certain number of days a week that don't fare well for women or whoever is, you know, the primary caretaker at home and whatnot. So I totally understand some of the challenges there. But I think in having the conversation, there is a real skill to facilitating conversations so that you can hear the many different voices in the room and really take into account, you know, what people are dealing with. I mentioned this before, but I find that because you have these conversations, you start developing understanding for your teammates and what they're going through. And I think that's part of the empathy that comes mm-hmm. out in developing team agreements and having team level discussions, because you want people to have your back. And I think that's what usually happens after these discussions. And then the other thing I'd say is that these aren't things that you create and then you just walk away from, right? They should be a living playbook, right? They're a playbook for your team to continue to refer to and adopt and adapt as you learn more about the team's needs. And as priorities change, things change not only for your work and your team and your organization, but also things change, you know, with you and what you have to do.
So I want to get to Jackie Young, who says, I've always worked on an account client basis and it's always been largely remote. However, it is a struggle to be both remote with your client and your employer. That's an interesting twist on this. So there are a lot of knowledge workers out there who are distributed across geography, as are their clients. And I found this working in a sales organization many years ago. I felt like I was detached from the company and all the goings on at the co-location. So how would you relate to what Jackie is saying?
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar boat. I have different clients that I work with, different projects, and you know, an experience that I've had recently is, you know, I'm working with Sasha Connor with Virtual Work Insider. And when we kicked off the engagement with a client, the first thing that we did was do a little team chartering and team agreements and talk about how we're going to communicate, how we're going to connect. And, you know, it gave an opportunity to, again, have the conversation about how to align. But then I think you also need to be a lot more intentional about gathering data about the companies that you work with, right? Like, we did a whole discovery session where we asked about org structure or, you know, the culture, and, you know, you spend time gathering more information. You just have to be more intentional because you're not there in person to kind of just absorb, you know, what's going on around you. So you have to be more precise when you're doing some of the fact gathering around your clients and your partners, and, you know, get data about the company so that you can be assimilated a lot faster without being there in person.
Fran?
Terry, tell us about the best source of team agreements. I mean, is there a standard template that you think works ideally? Other than engaging you to do this, where would the typical client find team agreements? I mean, I'm sure you can Google it and you get something, but if you were, you know, in the process of saying, hey, you know, I think I need to start doing this with our people.
Yeah.
Where would you go to start?
Yes, you can reach out to me. So thank you, Fran, for starting with that. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's great. I think what I've loved about over the last, you know, couple of years is there have been so many amazing resources put out there by a lot of companies, right? Atlassian, Dropbox, GitLab. You know, there are a lot of things out there. I'd say, you know, if you want to get started, with just something really simple, like reducing unnecessary meetings, for example, I'd say there's a
universal agreement to that, I think.
Well, yeah, I think that's really great because they're not everybody's ready for everything all at once, right? Change happens, you know, in bite sizes and at a different pace. So I'd say if you're interested in something kind of small and bite sized, you know, check out Dropbox's toolkits. There's one on reducing unnecessary meetings, and you can start there. Atlassian has an amazing amount of team playbooks. And so there's one called Working Agreements that you can reach out to if you want more of the self-service type of model.
That ties in with their technology as well, I presume.
Not necessarily. I mean, you can use their technology. Yeah, you can use their technology to do it. They have some of the templates built in with their technology, but they've shared it so that you can do it, you know, agnostic of their technology. And that's what I love about some of their plays.
That's great. And once you have this team agreement, you know, in writing to some extent, how often do you think that should be refreshed by most clients? I mean, is this an annual review? Is it a quarterly thing? What makes sense to you? I mean, everything is changing so quickly.
Right. I mean, it definitely depends on the rate of change within the company, I'd say. But, you know, in practice, I usually suggest that teams revisit, you know, on a quarterly basis. And it doesn't have to be a long drawn out process. It can just be like a check-in that you add to your team meeting, you know, and you can just say, yeah, you know, how are things going? Are things going well? Do we feel like we're getting what we need from our teammates? Do we understand when to come together? Do we, you know, have the flexibility that we need, you know, in our to accomplish other things, you know, in our lives? So I think it can be like a quick check-in. And then if you find that everyone's like, oh, like so-and-so isn't really following them, or I still feel like I'm not, you know, getting what I need, then it's time to revisit and do like a deeper dive on it. So I think relative, you know, around quarterly is a good rule of practice.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
So I have a follow-up question for you, Terry, and that is, and you may not be able to answer because so much of the practice of this is happening in real time. But how would one in a team measure the effectiveness of the agreement? What do you counsel your clients? Is it, do you look at outputs? Do you look at tasks completed? Do you look at ROI? I think if I were a manager today, I'd probably be thinking about some of these things. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it depends. And in my experience, it's like, it's definitely depends on the goals of the organization. But I think that, you know, I read something recently around measuring outcomes, not outputs. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that, right? And focusing on measuring outcomes. The other thing that, you know, I think about is when you think about team effectiveness, a lot of it is, you know, a lot of team effectiveness measures are self-reported by individuals on your team, right? And so some of the things I talked about earlier about teams being able to do the work they need to do, being able to further their goals and outcomes, being able to feel productive and effective. I mean, a lot of those measures are self-reported. I think that's okay. And that gives you a direction of how effective these team agreements are. And then there are also outcome-based measures, such as these related to organizational or business performance, which, you know, you can, each company measures it in a different way. And then what I don't encourage, and I think this is what's happening, is it doesn't feel great to hear about senior leaders, very senior leaders, you know, sitting around looking at badging reports or attendance reports.
Oh, wow.
And to me, you know, and that is an interesting measure of how this is playing out, because I don't think that's a great use of time or energy. Right. And, you know, I had a senior leader, operations leader, say to me recently, it just feels yucky, right? And it just feels yucky. And so I just wonder, you know, if senior leaders are spending time doing that, I feel like it's a missed opportunity to focus on things that actually might change and reimagine work for the better.
May I ask you about badging? Because coffee badging is blowing up LinkedIn right now. All these new terms.
It's four cups.
There's four new terms. I can't keep up.
I know.
The latest out is that you need to drink four cups of coffee to have a healthy later life.
I try to do that before 10 a.m.
That's out there. It's in, you know, in the press, available. If you want it, let me know.
But I would think that if you want to talk about a triggering mechanism, badging, and when just the sound of the word kind of freaks people out. So
somebody's watching you
and they're looking at your badge swipes. So how does that come up in kind of developing team agreements, or does it at all? And how perhaps do you lessen, as you say, the ickiness of it so that people feel safe and they feel like they are being empowered to, as Rob says, yes, outcomes and not outputs.
Yeah, that's a hard one to answer. I don't think I have all the answers right now because we're, you know, in real time, you know, addressing it. And, you know, By the way,
look who just arrived. Elvis is in the building.
Good morning, everybody. And I'm so terribly sorry. My wife would say Mercury is in retrograde, which is sort of her catch-all excuse whenever the proverbial this hits the fan. And so I'm not going to bore you with what hit the fan this morning, but great to see you all.
Good to see you, Mark. Continue, Terry.
Yeah, I like I said, I don't have a huge answer for that right now because we're in the middle of it. But I think that's, you know, part of what I'm seeing is, you know, middle managers, the middle layer of leadership really has their work cut out for them. I feel for them at this moment in trying to navigate the top-down policies and trying to apply that and also being available and understanding to the members of their team. So there's no easy way around it, but other than, you know, again, giving them those tools that I mentioned earlier, the tools and the framework to have those discussions and showing them at least like within their control what they can control within the discussion, I think is important. And, you know, I then go back to that framework that I mentioned earlier around empowerment, enablement, engagement, experimenting, and, you know, training employees as a customer.
Mark, I know you came in late to this discussion. This will be an open book test, so no worries. You know, we talked about the why of gathering, and we've delved into team agreements. And I'm wondering if you've got a specific question to pose to Terry, because you've worked with her.
Go ahead. Indeed, and I think, on that overarching question, you know, Terry, of why are we gathering, you know, what point of view is emerging for you and do you think in the industry with regards to how the answer to why are we gathering varies from organizational level, team level to individual level? And forgive me if you already probed into that rich vein, but you know, Fran, the individual, why is he choosing to gather versus Fran's manager? What sort of rhythms or needs might he be thinking about? And then, you know, up at the company level, at a Dropbox level, are there organizational level sort of gathering initiatives? Does that vary by level of organization? Is that an interesting cut on the question?
Yeah, we've touched on a little bit of this already. And I think, you know, I mean, one way I want to address this is, you know, as workplace leaders, I think it's our role to enable people to do their best work and trust people to make choices, right? I think employees value flexibility and autonomy. They want to be treated like adults. And that shouldn't be a surprise to people, right? And I'll share a story about my toddler. You know, every morning I ask Theodore, do you want yogurt for breakfast or cereal for breakfast? And every morning he says, I want yogurt and cereal, right?
There you go.
Smart kid. He likes the choices. He wants both. And so I think that just shows that, you know, it's not really a binary answer. And so I think it's not just about making policies and then walking away. Right. As leaders, we should be setting the vision or the North Star so that employees understand the desired outcomes. And then we should be removing the barriers, right? Removing the barriers, using technology wisely, adapting our workflows and our processes, and supporting our employees by helping them develop skills and capabilities to lead and work on globally distributed teams. And this requires a lot of effort internally, right? It requires coordination internally between your IT, real estate, people teams to come together to deliver the seamless experience. And so, and I say that, you know, like thinking about the experience for distributed teams is important because even if companies are mandating some time in the office, I think that a lot of the work employees do probably does require them to communicate or collaborate with someone that's in a different location. And then you compound that on top of that, all the other things that I mentioned earlier about individual preferences and commitments and what they value about connecting and gathering, right? Like 10 years ago, work was where I went to make friends. But I don't need that, you know, as much anymore from the workplace. I don't need my employer to solve the social aspect for me every day. I don't need them to tell me where to work. And so I think it's about giving people the choices to make some of these decisions, because everyone's at different stages in their lives too, and then they need different things.
And Terry, sticking with the reference to Theodore, and sort of probing, what's the right balance of choice and, you know, guidance? where guidance can be outright mandate, you know, you have to be in the office these explicit 4 days, or guidance might be encouraging you to consider certain days. So with Theodore, for example, he's developed a pattern and a comfort with yogurt and cereal, and he's doing that 5 days a week. And it might be that the parent feels, hey, Theodore, like a bowl of fresh fruit and some citrus, like you may know that you want that to become a part of the diet to stave off scurvy, right? And so, thinking about workplace, how best for organizations and team leaders to impart guidance without triggering the violent pushback of the employee child who doesn't want to be told what to do? How best to do that, and how much of that is appropriate, do you think, in this current moment?
Yeah, it's really hard. I wish I had like a magic wand or some magical, you know, calculator for this. But, you know, in talking about Theodore's example here, like I know that I'm not going to give him, both every morning. But I also know that the outcome is I want to make sure he has breakfast. I want to make sure that he has a full meal and a nutritious meal so that, you know, he can get ready, feel good, and then, you know, go on to daycare, right? And so, again, I'm driving back to the outcomes piece, is focusing on the outcomes and measuring those outcomes and having the conversation there. And then again, leading with trust. I don't think there's like a magical number of days or a number of hours that this really leads to in terms of that balance, but it's a constant, I feel like, just evolving discussion and engagement. And if we're doing it right as leaders, we're constantly evolving how we work. We're constantly reimagining the structures and the work processes and the workflows and the tools that we use. There should be no, I guess, stopping point, right? Like a good workplace experience, I think, is one that continues to evolve and keeps with the times and allows for people to continue to thrive and be even more effective.
I want to get to Mike Thorne. Mike Thorne, thank you so much. You've been burning up the comment thread here, and I don't want you to feel ignored.
I can't see the comment thread. Am I supposed to see
it? I got to bring it up. You'll see it when we log off and you go back to LinkedIn, they'll all be there. So thank you, Mike, for really going to town here. And he says, so many senior leaders are not sure who they are as a human being. I agree with that. And cannot possibly lead people in this environment. In essence, he says, they have struggled to be genuine and continue to push what they know, and their focus is away from the P&L, profit and loss, and more geared towards, I love this, people and listening. Middle managers are caught, like Terry says. That's a really good point. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, Terry.
This goes back to what one of those senior leaders said to me earlier. It feels yucky. To be caught in the middle. And I mean, I think, you know, my thoughts are, and I posted something about this a couple weeks ago on LinkedIn, is, you know, have you checked in on your middle managers lately? I think that with all these mandates, you know, coming out and people, you know, readjusting their work rhythms and their patterns and how they get work done, I think it's really important to continuously check in on your managers and try to understand what you need to do to help remove the roadblocks for them and help enable them to not only satisfy, I guess, what the top down is trying to get you to do, but also be understanding. Because at the end of the day, I think, you know, I'm team people. I'm team people, team individuals. And I think at the end of the day, you know, the companies really need to think about empowering teams and managers to make more decisions about this, because it will impact engagement and it will impact talent retention and attraction. It will impact, you know, if, and especially if companies have goals around DEI and sustainability and other things like that, I think that we're going to have to start seeing a little bit more, you know, flexibility in how a lot of these policies are interpreted, so that middle managers don't have this huge burden. I mean, they already have an administrative burden of all the other stuff they have to do as managers. You're just adding more on top of that with some of these mandates.
You know, Terry, I coined this phrase the other day and people seem to like it. In the C-suite, there's a lot of ABS, which is aging boomer syndrome. These are people who are in charge, but they can't really relate at a level to their middle managers or their staff as to what they're doing. Do you have any advice as to how to deal with a senior leader with ABS?
Ask your healthcare professional.
It does sound like a little bit of a disease, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, I think it starts with, you know, wanting to learn and listen and engage at all different levels. I think that my advice is to treat this as a shared responsibility across the organization of really engaging different levels in the process of unlearning old behaviors, right? These old behaviors, old ways of doing things, and reimagining a new way of work and learning new skills and behaviors together. But it starts with, you know, wanting to learn and adjust. And there's got to be a little bit of a realization from, I think, the top that they don't have all the answers, and that's okay. You know, and I think it's actually more authentic and more vulnerable if leaders can acknowledge that and then seek support and influence from within the organization. There are people there. There are people within your organization who have ideas of how to make this work, and they want to be part of the solution. So thinking of this as a shared responsibility to make the future of work even better is really, I think, the key.
So we have time for one more question. I'm going to give it to Mark.
We're already there at the end of time.
I know, we're having fun.
Time flies when you're having fun, you know. It's just
Mark.
Terry, from your experience at Dropbox and your more recent experiences thinking deeply about this change and trying to affect the right outcomes for both senior management and team leaders and individuals, where are you sensing the right entry point is for the crafting of agreements, you know, team agreements, gathering playbooks, for a given company? Do you think it's best to see that at the willing and interested team level? Do you think it's best to see that at the higher level organizational level with sort of, you know, gathering rhythms around all hands? What, you know, at what level and why would you say is your current point of view on that?
Yeah, I think definitely at the team level is a great place to start. And you know, I mentioned some of the reasons why earlier around, you know, the different needs of the team and being at different stages. You know, with gathering playbooks, you know, I mentioned a little bit about this before, but with playbooks, I think it's essential to have those conversations about the norms, async versus sync. What's the purpose of gathering? What's the value of gathering so that your teams understand when virtual, when in person is required, right? That's a good conversation to have with your team. And so when you develop this playbook, right, I think that's what your team can use to guide some of the decisions that they make. So individuals are more guided and informed about the decisions that they make. You know, I'm working with Liquid Space, you know, a member of Mark's team, on creating these templates for gathering playbooks. And, you know, I'm excited to share some of this work over the next few months around these playbooks. And the idea here is to take data about individual needs, aggregate the data so that you can see, you know, across the team where some of the strengths are and where some of the opportunities are, and then surface those gathering rhythms and rituals. And I think that's what's going to be really amazing, is now having data to kind of inform how and to have the conversations about when and why. And then I think from there, once you start seeing patterns across different teams, across different functions, I think then you can start seeing patterns emerge at the organizational level to then inform what organizational patterns and rituals might need to be in place to create organizational rhythms or rituals playbook.
This has been a fascinating discussion. We could go longer, but that's not fair to people who've got things to do for the rest of their day. But this I want to do, Terry, and I think my partners here, Mark and Fran, will agree. We want to get you back at some point to tell us what new you've learned, what new insights, what new practices, what future practices you're seeing, because this is not a static process. It's fluid. It's fluid.
Yeah, we're learning in the moment. We're doing it as we speak.
I love it. I want to get to our question, which we ask all our guests, which is, what's your work fit? So Terry, tell us what attribute, condition, experience, place, or state of mind makes work a wonderful part of your day doing many wonderful things and not the all-consuming time suck of a day. What's your work fit, Terry?
Well, starting the day off with you three really helps with my work fit. No, but you know, I've said flexibility and choice many times, but the ability to design my day is so important, right? And I think it's because it really depends on what I'm trying to accomplish. It depends on where I'm at. And so I like to think that my work fit is really having that autonomy and choice to design my day around the needs that I have for that day. And so one thing that I've learned over the last, few months is around setting boundaries. I wasn't really great at setting boundaries prior to the pandemic. I have to say I was definitely one of those people that worked through lunch and didn't properly take a lunch with my colleagues and whatnot. I just worked and worked and worked. And so now I try to have more boundaries in my day, take the time for a lunch, stop at a certain time so that I can be there for my toddler and not be on my phone. I definitely don't want my toddler to, see me on the phone all the time. I don't want him to see that, because otherwise he grabs my phone. He's just like, da, 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 like, and I don't want that. So that's like one thing around just designing time. And the other is in terms of place, I think it just totally depends. Like I like quiet environments when I need to like read and dive into some deep research. Otherwise, stick me in the middle of an airport lobby or something. Like I love working in airports. Stick me there for more of like the creative processes. I love the sound and the bustle of people around me. And that's like really fun for me to be, around people and draw energy off of that. So really it depends is the answer. And then the other thing I'll say is what I need to work on, because we're not all perfect, but I need to work on in order for my work fit is to add more movement to my day. Right, movement, getting more movement, switching up my work settings, getting more exercise throughout the day. It's good for the body, good for the brain. So I definitely need to do more of that, to really round out my work fit.
Very briefly, I'm wondering if you could share with our audience, who I'm sure were thrilled with this discussion, where they can find you on social media and how they can get in contact with you to continue this discussion.
Yeah, I think the best place is LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm Terry with a Y, Wiener spelled I-E. So find me on LinkedIn. I'd love to continue the conversation. I love having coffee chats with people because I learn from people every day that I talk to about what's going on in their world, in their organizations. And, I'm there for people to have a conversation with and be your virtual shoulder to cry on or whatever you want.
That's great. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, gentlemen. Mark Gilbreth from Liquid Space and Francis Saley. Fran Saley, thank you all. We will see you next week with another What's Your Work Fit in the Workplace episode. In the meantime, have a great rest of the week. See you soon.
Thanks, Terry.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.